It's the Kim Munson Show, analyzing the most important stories.
That seems to me like government is establishing a religion.
The latest in politics and world affairs.
If you give people rights, women's rights, gay rights, whatever, there can't be equal rights if there's special rights.
Today's current opinions and ideas.
Surveys show that people still really prefer freedom versus force.
Is it freedom or is it force? Let's have a conversation.
Indeed. Let's have a conversation and welcome to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Be sure and check out our website. That is Kim Munson, MUNSON.com. Sign up for our weekly newsletter there. You'll get first look at all of our upcoming guests, as well as our most recent Sounding Off with Kim Munson podcast and our most recent op-eds. This last newsletter, there was an excellent op-ed by researcher and author Patty Kurgan regarding how important it is to understand voting and to vote, and also an excellent Sounding Off with Kim Munson podcast with Commerce City Mayor Benjamin Huseman. He was recently censured. The reason why is because he was making government transparent to the people, as well as asking difficult questions before they made decisions. Seems like a really good idea to me, but he was censured by his other colleagues on City Council. Be sure and check that out. A great show planned for you today. Today is our important speeches and documents of America's founding with patriotic historian, West Point grad, and former Army Ranger, Ben Martin. This show is brought to you by the Harris family, which we're very grateful to them for that. We will be talking with Wayne Woolverd in the first segment regarding Convention of the States, which they have three things that they're working on to try to rein this government back in, and we'll talk with him as well. Always like to say thank you to this great team that I get to work with, and that is producer Steve, Zach, Patty, Keith, and Charlie, the people here at Crawford Broadcasting. And thank you to each of you listeners. You're each treasured, valued. You have a purpose today. Strive for excellence. Take care of your heart, your soul, your mind, and your body. Big day yesterday, producer Steve. Amy Coney Barrett, the Senate vote was held, and she was confirmed last night. I watched it. It was absolutely historical. Did you happen to see it?
Well, you used the word historical. I'm wondering if there wasn't some hysterical components in it as well, in terms of the drama coming from, you know, what side of the aisle.
You know, it's just astounding to me. This Macy Hirono from Hawaii is just very disrespectful. Apparently, when they took her vote, she responded, hell no. And they always talk about, oh, that Donald Trump is not presidential. When you look at the behavior over here on the Democrat side of threats and their response to things, once again, they are putting onto him the behavior that they actually have. And it's truly historical. She will be a great jurist. And another thing that is historical about it is she is the first Supreme Court justice that has elementary school children. I think that brings a perspective that I just love, producer Steve.
Well, I watch her and the things that she says, and then with that thought in mind, in terms of still being in a household with young children, I mean, she's covering the age spectrum very well, and will bring that perspective that maybe some of the older, you know, jurists in the past don't have.
I think the fact that she has so many young children, she has seven children in her household, was one of the reasons she was able to respond to the childlike behavior of her Senate confirmation hearings.
Great point. That was a great tie-in there. But back to your point about what's coming from the Democratic side of the aisle, I look at Schumer's comments last night, and they're, you know, they say
they're a threat.
Words can be made into weapons, and boy, he's a master. I mean, the last thing he says is, my colleagues may regret this for a lot longer than they think. Now, that's obviously a reference to whatever's coming in the future. Someday, you guys won't be in the majority, and we will, and then look out. We're going to whack you. Jeez.
Well, and this goes back to, in 2013, it used to take 60 votes to confirm judges. And back in 2013, Chuck Schumer changed that.
Was that, or is it Harry Reid?
Oh, hold on. I think it was it Harry Reid or hold on here. Which one of those? No, it was by it was Schumer, Chuck Schumer. And back then, no, hold on. You got it in front of you? I've got to take a look at this so that I get this right. Okay. Oh, I should have had this right. Here we go. Former Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid, Democrat, Nevada, first eliminated the 60-vote threshold in 2013 to overcome GOP stonewalling of President Obama's nominations to the lower courts and the executive branch. Known as invoking the nuclear option at the time, Reid kept the higher standard in place for the Supreme Court. They took away that standard for basically everything else. And at that point, Mitch McConnell said, "You may regret this." And I think that it was well within his purveyance to do what he did. They did that with all of the Supreme Court confirmations of Gorsuch and Kavanaugh. There used to be just kind of a mutual respect regarding the Supreme Court nominations. I looked this up. Sotomayor back in 2009 was confirmed with a 68-31 vote. And Ilana Kagan was confirmed back in 2010 with a 63-37 vote. There was never this kind of shenanigans. But I don't think that conservatives actually realized that for the last 30 or 40 years, there has been a real play for the courts. The radical progressive activist left has been moving into the judicial branch. And you can actually go all the way back to Roe versus Wade, where they wanted to start to use the courts to make law instead of the courts determining whether or not laws were constitutional or not. The fact that Ruth Bader Ginsburg did not step down during the Obama administration is somewhat telling, because they never dreamed, I don't think they ever dreamed, that they would ever lose the presidential elections. And it would, from a strategic standpoint, she should have stepped down. Obama then could have appointed someone much younger, and they would have had the hold on the court that they really wanted. It is astounding, and I think it was somewhat arrogant that they did not make that move, because they never thought that they would lose an election, Steve.
Well, when it comes to the game of chess that, you know, politics at this level can be, their strategy, for the last, I don't know how many years, escapes me. It really does.
It really, really does. We're going to jump over here in just a minute to Wayne Woolford. He is with Convention of the States. Before we do that, though, want to mention our voter's guide. My friends, I know many of us have election fatigue. We have been watching this election and working on this for months. There are a lot of people that have been just trying to take care of their families. Kids have been at home. They're trying to educate them, trying to keep the, you know, the wheels on the bus, if you will, on their lives. And they realize that there is election now, and we need to step forward. We need to step into this and be informing people. And one of the great things that you can do is take the voter's guide that Rick Turnquest and I put together. It is on my website, and share that with people so that they have a good tool as they complete their ballots. Our quote for today, because we're going to be talking with Ben Martin in segments 2, 3, and 4 about young Lincoln and two of his very important speeches. Therefore, I thought Abraham Lincoln was the guy to quote today. He was an American statesman and attorney who served as the 16th president of the United States from 1861 to 1865. He led the nation through the American Civil War, and he was born in 1809. He died in 1865, and he said, "We the people are the rightful masters of both Congress and the courts, not to overthrow the Constitution, but to overthrow the men who pervert the Constitution." Very powerful, spoken by Abraham Lincoln. Let's jump over here to Wayne Woolford, because he is with Convention of the States. Wayne, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you very much, Kim. I thank you for inviting me, and I want to share what we, the Convention of the States here in Colorado, and our 41,000 supporters, get out the vote. We have several volunteers that are making targeted calls to registered voters, but they're registered voters who have not voted recently, and we use what is a program called Telepatriot that our national team designed, Tim. Interrupt me if you have any questions as I go along here. The Telepatriot application runs on a smartphone, and it allows a person to make multiple calls in a rapid succession in an easy way and record the results of it. The call can be voice or text or both. Some of our callers use a phone first, frequently leaving a voice message. If there's no answer, they send a text. The Convention of States is a nonpartisan group. We do not support candidates or specific legislators as a 501c4. We support conservative policies. Convention of States, as I say, is a national grassroots movement started in 2013 by Mark Meckler. And there are some 4 million national supporters. We have 15 states that have passed a resolution supporting the concepts of, and here are the three ideas. We are proposing amendments allowed under, if I prefer the word, we are responsible for proposing amendments under Article 5, thanks to Colonel George Mason. And we're proposing term limits, fiscal responsibility, and states' rights, which means get the federal government back into Washington as the original 1787 Constitution states. Give federalism the right to the states that they have, education. The Environmental Protection Agency is really hurting our farmers and our ranchers, and our desire and the goal that we have is to return to the original Constitution, and thank God that Amy Coney Barrett was elected and
appointed yesterday.
Mm-hmm. Oh, my God. That is absolutely great, Kim. Kim, are there any questions that you have about the Convention of States that I can share in the brief time that you have provided me? And I really thank you for allowing me on today.
Well, Wayne, the Convention of the States is based on Article 5 of the 1787 Constitution, our Constitution. And this is a movement to, as you mentioned, put the federal government back in the box that it is supposed to be in. And also, I hope that we can fight back against this bureaucratic administrative state. What's your quick comment on that, Wayne?
Look, the original Constitution was about 4,500 words, with its Bill of Rights about 7,500 words. Unfortunately, Kim, today we live under what's called the annotated Constitution of some 3,000 words and a book weighing 10 pounds. You know, there has been incremental, you know, death by a thousand cuts that have taken place, at least since, you know, the 1960s when I was a teenager. You know, I'm 76 years old, and, you know, I grew up in the 60s. And, you know, I'm kind of paying my debts that with four kids and 13 grandkids, I did not pay attention to politics in the 60s, 70s, and 80s, and I'm paying the price now. So I'm doing what I can with Convention of States as a volunteer, and I'm spending 7 days a week, many hours a day, making calls, generating new volunteers, active as a trainer for the new volunteers. And came in all candor, I think it's the last chance that we have. America's fallen over the cliff.
Well, that is why this election is so important. How can people get more information about Convention of the States, Wayne?
Kim, it's real simple. The website is one word, conventionofstates.com. That's a public website. There is an immense amount of information. If someone is so inclined, under our 501c3, we're educational, under our 501c4, they can sign the petition that is really focused on getting our state legislators to write a resolution, because the states own the Constitution. It is not signed by the governor. We have 15 states. We need 34 states that speak to the concepts of term limits, fiscal responsibility, states' rights. And Article 5 says two-thirds, only 34 states are needed. And the words that are in the Article 5, Congress shall call a convention of states. It will not be a runaway convention. It will not rewrite the Constitution. It is strictly term limits, fiscal responsibility, states' rights.
Wayne Walford, thank you so much. And again, that website is conventionofstates.com. Wayne, I appreciate your call this morning.
Thank you for letting me on, Kim, and have a great day. Take care and stay safe.
Okay, thank you. Before we go to break, one of my great partners, Hooters Restaurants, wanted to give a shout out to them. October is Breast Cancer Awareness Month, and this year Hooters across the U.S. are working to raise money for breast cancer fundraising. Their goal as a company, not just Hooters Colorado, but for the entire company, is to raise $1 million. Last year, they raised $700,000. There's five things that they're doing. They're all related to pink. You can purchase a pink drink, and part of that goes towards the fundraising. You can donate $5 for the pink color change cup. You can fill out an endowment card and for a dollar and have your name on the wall. You can round up the change on your check, or they have specialty pink themed merchandise. A dollar from every item goes towards fundraising. They have all kinds of specials as well, lunch specials, happy hour specials. Hooters Restaurants is the place to go. You can help out with a very important cause. Go to HootersColorado.com for more information. That's HootersColorado.com for more information. We'll be right back with Ben Martin. We're going to take a little step back from the election fatigue and talk about some big ideas, Lincoln and two of his very important speeches when he was young.
Karen Levine has over 30 years in the real estate industry. The reaction to the COVID-19 Wuhan virus is presenting unprecedented and unpredictable opportunities and challenges in buying or selling your home. That is why you need to work with award-winning realtor Karen Levine. Karen Levine comes highly recommended by Kim Munson. Call award-winning realtor Karen Levine today at 303-877-7516. Karen's expertise will help guide you through this crazy real estate market. Call Karen Levine at 303-877-7516 today.
The silent odorless killer, CO2. Your house has a monitor. Does your mask? Masks can actually be pretty dangerous, according to the National Institutes of Health. They say that inhaling high levels of carbon dioxide, CO2, may be life-threatening. OSHA does not recommend masks in oxygen-deprived environments, specifically elevations over 3,000 vertical feet. The mask mandate is not for your health. It's killing you. Killing you one breath at a time, thanks to selfish Governor Polis, paid for by FECUnited.com.
You'd like to get in touch with one of Kim Munson's sponsors, but you can't recall their phone number. Find a full list of advertising partners on Kim's website, KimMunson.com. That's Kim, M-O-N-S-O-N.com.
And welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Be sure and check out our website. That is Kim Munson, M-O-N-S-O-N.com. Sign up for our weekly newsletter. You'll get first look at all of our upcoming guests, as well as our most recent Sounding Off with Kim Munson podcast and our most recent op-eds. We'd appreciate it if you go over to Facebook and give us a like as well. Let's take a step back and talk about some big ideas. I think many of us have election fatigue. However, this last 7 days, we need to be getting people to vote. It's astounding to me that people don't vote. However, it is so important to vote, but also to understand what you're voting on. Rick Turnquest and I spent a lot of time, did a very thorough analysis of all of the 11 questions that are on the Colorado ballot. You can find that voter's guide at Kim Munson, M-O-N-S-O-N.com. It is a great tool for you as you complete your ballot. Would also recommend that you send it to 10 people that have not voted yet. Encourage them to vote. We make the case for voting Republican. We name the 17 House Democrats. We call them the cruel 17 that voted to let people die alone. Rick does a very important analysis of Colorado's finances. It's all right there in the voter's guide. Let's talk to Ben Martin now about some of the big ideas of America and America's founding. This show is brought to you by the Harris family. Ben Martin is a patriotic historian, a graduate of West Point, and a former Army Ranger. Ben Martin, welcome to the show.
Oh, I'm happy to be here this morning, Kim. How are you doing?
I am good. We're going to talk about some big ideas, a young Lincoln. Couple of his speeches. I think it's important that people understand that Lincoln was self-taught, Ben Martin.
So very important. I think he might have had in his whole lifetime 1 year of formal schooling. And we'll talk a little bit about that in in here today. But you look back at some of our great founders, like Benjamin Franklin, George Washington, and our father of our second founding, which was Abraham Lincoln. None of those men had any more than about a year's worth of formal schooling. And look at what they made of themselves. Just in us.
Well, and fast forward to our education system now. Baltimore, Maryland spends, I think, almost $20,000 per student to educate kids. However, they could not find one student who was proficient in reading. It is astounding to me. And think about that. For a class of 20, and there's very few classes there are 20, but for a class of 20, that means there's $240,000 floating around. It is wrong that we spend that kind of money and our kids cannot read and write. And here we have our great thinkers that were self-taught. There is something that's wrong with our education system. COVID-19, I think one of the linings to the cloud on that is the fact that it has disrupted and brought to light what has been happening in our education system, and we need to get that turned around. But let's go over to a young Lincoln who was self-taught. He read by candlelight. He was a voracious reader. Let's jump in here, Ben Martin.
Okay, well, let's talk about this. In our introduction today, we're going to discuss our great 16th president, Abraham Lincoln. Our presentation today is entitled Young Lincoln, as we talked earlier. And we're going to speak a little bit about the early part of his life, but we're going to focus most of our efforts on his early part of Lincoln's political life. So I was thinking maybe we should call this Young Political Lincoln. But that's just a thought. After we briefly trace early life, the early years of his life from birth to his reaching legal age and setting out on his own, we will review his self-education in law, as you were talking about before, becoming a lawyer, and his election as an Illinois state legislature. We will then examine one of his first recorded public speeches in 1838. And when we talk about this one, this is his Lyceum speech. It is uncanny to see the parallels that he speaks of in that speech with what is happening today in the United States of America. It's chilling to go back and read it again and review it and then think about what's happening today. So I think that's going to be very, very instructional today. That speech was directed at the violence and lawlessness occurring at that time in our nation's history, and what might be the dire consequences of such public chaos. So we should recognize some clear parallels in what is happening today, and this may give us some advice and a bit of incentive towards correcting such destructive behavior and preventing its recurrence. Next, we will review Lincoln's early course in politics, his four terms as an Illinois state representative, and his one term in the U.S. House of Representatives. And after his stint in Congress, he returns back to Illinois, and even though he was elected to a fifth term in the Illinois legislature, he declined to accept that seat, and he retired from politics. He then became a successful lawyer, both locally and on the circuit. He was very content with his new life outside of politics. We will then discuss the series of national compromises, which we talked about last month's program, and it culminated by the Kansas-Nebraska Compromise of 1854, and after that, the 1857 Dred Scott decision of the United States Supreme Court, which brought him back into the political arena and into the newly formed Republican Party, and the 1958 race for one of Illinois' two U.S. Senate seats, the one held by the incumbent, Senator Stephen Douglas. So we were going to talk about that today. We will probably not get to some of the things, but we will do the best to concentrate on those two speeches and his early life so that we can have a better understanding of that. So in his early life, we're going to give a short summary. Most folks that I speak to do not know that Lincoln was not born in Illinois, nor that he did not live there all his life. Most do know his birthday, at least most who are older than 50 years. He was born on 12 February 1809. He used to be, we used to rightfully celebrate that day as a national holiday, paying tribute to the great achievements he made on behalf of our nation and its people. In fact, it is questionable we would still be a nation of United States without all he did to save our nation, which in fact cost him his life. Besides that Herculean accomplishment, he filled our founders' most fervent desires to not only put slavery on the path of ultimate extinction, but to force it down that path to its actual destination, extinction itself, and to fix our Constitution so that it conforms to our framers' design and the principles of our Declaration. Now, he was born in Hardin County, Kentucky, and many people that I speak with don't know that, in 1809 to Thomas and Nancy Lincoln. He has an older sister at that time named Sarah, who was born on 10 February, 1807, almost exactly 2 years apart. In 1811, his family moved to Knob Creek, Kentucky, where they lived until 1816 before moving to what is now Spencer County, Indiana. So now he moves from Kentucky, where he moved once while he was there, into in Indiana. And 2 years later, in 1818, his mother, Nancy, tragically dies an excruciating death from something called milk sickness. Now, milk sickness comes from the cows eating a poisonous plant, which goes into the milk and becomes poisonous to people that consume it. So in 1819, then, his dad remarries a widow from Kentucky named Sarah. They call her Sally. And she brings with her three children, Elizabeth, Matilda, and John, into the Lincoln family. His stepmom tries to get Abe to attend some school, but his father resists, preferring to make money by renting young Lincoln as a laborer to the neighboring farmers. I do not know out there if any of you have ever heard the phrase that normally used now only in sports contests, he was beaten like a rented mule, which alludes to the treatment normally extended to property that does not belong to the user. This is probably why Lincoln's relationship with his dad is described as estranged.
Ben, let's jump in here. My understanding is that Lincoln, because of that relationship with his father, did not attend the funeral services for his father because they were so estranged. Is that correct?
That's not only correct, but before he died, they asked him to go back and visit his father to see him before he died, and Lincoln refused to do that too.
Okay, let's stop for just a moment. Jason McBride, Presidential Wealth Management, is on the line. I know, Jason McBride, you are a big fan of Ben Martin and this history. Did you happen to know that about Lincoln, that he had that estranged relationship with his father?
No, I did not know that.
When we talk about kids today that are growing up in difficult situations and think that they can't get past that, I think that Lincoln is such an inspiration for a very tough childhood. But he continued to read, he continued to think, and look at what he accomplished. Jason, I find that absolutely amazing, and we should never write anybody off because they come from difficult circumstances.
No, absolutely true, and don't write yourself off either.
That's for sure. Quickly, yesterday the market really got kicked around.
Yeah, it had a rough day, Kim. We've got a stimulus that's still stalled, and obviously the Democrats have one thing they can talk about, and that's COVID. And we've got a compliant media. In fact, I was I think I saw some news that NBC has changed their name to Nothing But COVID. CBS has changed it to COVID is the best slogan. And ABC has changed their name to Always Be COVIDing. So they are compliant with the Democratic Party and, you know, of course, trying as we slide into the last few days before the election to really ramp up any negative news that they can about, you know, cases, about anything they can having to do with this virus, because, Kim, there really isn't much else. So I think we can expect more of this. The market did have a very rough day yesterday, Dow down about 650. Most of the indexes did break below support at the 50-day moving average. So it would be really good if we could get a decent day today to quickly start to repair that damage. But, you know, the next few days, I think you can expect some back-and-forth volatility, and you can expect it until this election has been settled.
Although we don't give advice out there, I think that this is just a few days to just fasten your seatbelt, because who knows what's going to happen between now and November 3rd. But we'll keep an eye on that. One thing that I really would recommend over this next 7 days is that people go and download this analysis that you did of what the Trump tax cuts have done for everyday hardworking people. And in fact, 50 Cent, the rapper, took a look at the Biden tax plan and said instead of 50 Cent, he would be 20 Cent. And so you have seen some of these black rappers like Ice Cube and 50 Cent come out and say that they are supporting Trump, which I find is absolutely astonishing. I think the black community is going to show up big for Trump. And I would recommend that people download that analysis so they understand it's just numbers, what it actually has done for everyday people. Jace McBride.
Yeah, absolutely true. Again, you can debate a lot of points, but numbers are hard to argue with. In this analysis that we've done, Kim, it's very easy to look at and see the stark differences before Trump tax cuts, after Trump tax cuts, with families or individuals in the exact same income situation. It's there right in black and white before your eyes. Two pages that you can use for some good ammo to make sure that you're educated and you know what's going on with at least that part of it.
For sure. And having more money in our pocket is very helpful for everyday hardworking people. Jason McBride, people can find that at airpresidential.com. That's AIRpresidential.com. Thanks so much. Fasten your seatbelts. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Have a good one, Kim.
Great. And we'll be right back with Ben Martin regarding two important speeches by a young Lincoln. Stay tuned.
Metropolitan Total Property is more than landscaping. Locally owned and operated since 1987, their team is proud to be your neighbor and live in the community. Metropolitan Total Property stands behind their work, and your complete satisfaction is their top priority. Kim Munson highly recommends Metropolitan Total Property for landscaping and more. She was one of their very first clients way back in 1987. Be sure to check out MetropolitanTotalProperty.com for their complete menu of services. Again, that's MetropolitanTotalProperty.com.
Recently, rates in the mortgage market have hit near record lows. Lorne Levy with Polygon Financial notes that the COVID-19 Wuhan virus disruption has created potential opportunities to refinance your mortgage that could save you thousands of dollars. And for those senior listeners who may be looking for another source of income, exploring a reverse mortgage with Lorne Levy may be a solution. With over 17 years in the mortgage industry, Lorne Levy has the experience to answer your questions. Call Lorne Levy at 303-880-8881. That's 303-880-8881 for a mortgage checkup today.
And welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Be sure to check out our website. That is Kim Munson, MUNSON.com. Sign up for our weekly newsletter. You get first look at all of our upcoming guests, as well as our most recent Sounding Off with Kim Munson podcast and our most recent op-eds. On the line with me is Ben Martin. We've been doing this throughout the year. It's the important speeches and documents of the American founding. Ben Martin is a graduate of West Point, a former Army Ranger, and a patriotic historian. We're talking about a young Lincoln. And are we ready, Ben Martin, to jump over to Lincoln's speech of the Young Men's Lyceum in 1838?
Sure, Kim. We can do that right now. I just wanted to say that it was 1830 when the Lincolns moved from Indiana into Illinois. and that he lived in New Salem. And I just want to recommend New Salem to anybody that's traveling through that area. It's about 30 miles northwest of Springfield, and it has been restored to the way it was when Lincoln lived there. And artisans work there, plying their craft as they would have then. It's a great place to visit, as I said. And one of the things that I find most fascinating was the general store that Lincoln owned, and that's where his post office that he ran was, has been recreated and operates as they did when Lincoln lived there. It's a great educational visit, and you just find it really fascinating. So that's was in, now we go to 1831, as he was the postmaster. He became a surveyor. He taught himself how to survey. He runs for the legislature in 1832 and is defeated, and then he runs again in 1834, and he wins his first seat in the Illinois state legislature, and he wins four more times before he pulls back from politics. And so we go back now to 1837 when he moves from New Salem, like I said, which is 30 miles northwest of Springfield, to the state capitol, because he has been studying law. He's been borrowing law books and studying law, you know, by firelight most of the time back there in New Salem. And he finally gets his, he's admitted to the bar in 1837, and he moves to Springfield, where he can practice law, and he sets up a law practice there with the person that lent him the law books. And so we go back to 1838. He just moved there. He's less than a year he's been there. And he delivers this speech to the Springfield Young Man's Lyceum. So now that we have a better understanding of Lincoln's early political career, we go back to 27 January 1838 and examine one of his first recorded. Go ahead.
Explain what Lyceum is to our listeners.
Okay, I was going to do that. The Young Men's Lyceum was an organization of 3,000 plus clubs and speaking venues across America, which would host regular events to allow members and traveling dignitaries to speak to local members and audiences. It could be affectionately called the Toastmasters of the 19th century. These regular speaking events, usually held weekly, were also social events, much like sometimes Toastmasters is. And although membership, as the name implies, was limited to males, women were allowed and highly encouraged to attend the speeches and the associated social events. So the title of Lincoln's speech there is the perpetration of our political institutions. It was focused on the recent outbreak of mob violence occurring across the nation, which he condemned and identified as the beginning of the end of our political institutions and our nation. He accurately describes it and famously calls it the approach of danger. And after identifying it, he then asks the important question, how shall we fortify against it? He answers that question. Let us review a few quoted excerpts to hear the gist of Lincoln's words and thoughts conveyed so eloquently in his speech. So he starts out by talking about where we are in our nation's history. So he said, in the great journal of things happening under the sun, the American people find our account running under the date of the 19th century of the Christian era. We find ourselves in the peaceful possession of the fairest portion of earth. We find ourselves under the government of a system of political institutions conducing more essentially to the ends of civil and religious liberty than any of which the history of former times tells us. We, when mounting the stage of existence, find ourselves the equal inheritors of these fundamental blessings. We toil not in the acquirement of or establishing of them. They are legacies bequeathed to us by a hardy, brave, and patriotic, but now lamented and departed race of ancestors. Theirs was the task, and nobly they performed it, to possess themselves and through themselves us of this godly land and to uprear upon its hills and its valleys a political edifice of liberty and equal rights. 'Tis our responsibility only to transmit these to the latest generation that fate shall permit the world to know. This task of gratitude to our fathers, justice to ourselves, duty to posterity, and love for our species in general, all imperatively require us faithfully to perform this, our responsibility. And that's his opening, and that should get everybody's attention. How then shall we perform it, this responsibility he's talking about? And what point shall we expect the approach of danger? By what means shall we fortify against it? Shall we expect some transatlantic military giant to step the ocean and crush us at a blow? Never. All the armies of Europe, Asia, and Africa combined, with all the treasures of Earth, our own excepted, in their military chest, with a Bonaparte for a commander, could not by force take a drink from the Ohio or make a track on the Blue Ridge in a trial of 1,000 years. At what point, then, is the approach of danger to be expected? I answer, if it ever reach us, it must spring up among us. It cannot come from abroad. If destruction be our lot, we must ourselves be its author and finisher. As a nation of free men, we must live through all times or die by suicide. He says, I hope I am overwary, but if I am not, there is even now something of ill omen amongst us. I mean the increasing disregard for law which pervades our country, the growing disposition to substitute the wild and furious passions in lieu of the sober judgment of courts, and the savage mobs for the executive ministry of justice. Accounts of outrage committed by mobs form the everyday news of our times. Such are the effects of mob law, and such are the scenes becoming more and more frequent in this land so lately famed for love of law and order, and the stories of which have even now grown too familiar to attract anything more than an idle remark. Doesn't that sound familiar today?
I was just thinking, as you were reading those words, Ben Martin, that yes, we are in a time that they were back then. We should take heart that this is not the first time that this has occurred, and we're living in historic times right now. The fact that Amy Coney Barrett was voted on and confirmed last night to the U.S. Supreme Court, the fact that she is a constitutionalist that will go back to the Constitution as she is looking at law, means that I think that we have a great opportunity to get ourselves, get this American ship righted again, Ben Martin.
That's so right. He continues by saying, what has this to do with the perpetration of our political institutions? I answer, it has much to do with it. Its direct consequences are, comparatively speaking, but a small evil, and much of its danger consists in the proneness of our minds to regard it direct as its only consequence. The innocent alike with the guilty fall victim into the ravages of mob law, and thus it goes by, up, step by step, till all the walls erected for the defense of the person and property of individuals are trodden down and disregarded. But all this, even, is not the full extent of evil. Good men, men who love tranquility, who desire to abide by laws and enjoy the benefits, who would gladly spill their blood in the defense of this country, seeing their property destroyed and their families insulted, and their lives endangered, their persons injured, and seeing nothing in prospect that forebodes a change for the better, become tired of and disgusted with a government that offers them no protection, and are not much adverse to change in which they imagine they have nothing to lose. Thus, then, by the operation of this mobocratic spirit, which all must admit is now abroad in the land, the strongest bulwark of any government, in particular of those constituted like ours, may eventually and effectively be broken down and destroyed. I mean the attachment of the people. Whenever this effect shall be produced among us, whenever the vicious portion of population shall be permitted to gather in bands of hundreds and thousands and burn churches and ravage and rob stores, shoot persons at pleasure with impunity, depend on it, this government cannot last. Here then is the point at which danger may be expected. How shall we fortify against it? Let every American, every lover of liberty, every well-wisher to his posterity swear by the blood of the Revolution never to violate in the least particular the laws of the country and never to tolerate their violation by others. Reason must furnish all the materials for our future support and defense. Let those materials be molded into general intelligence, sound morality, and in particular, a reverence for the Constitution and laws, just like you're talking about before, Kim. And that we improve to the last, that we remain free to the last. Upon these, the proud fabric of freedom rests as the rock of its basis, and as truly as has been said of the only great institution, only greater institution than us, heaven, the gates of hell shall not prevail against it.
So, Ben Martin, this is the speech that Lincoln gave to the, what is it, the men of the Young Men's Lyceum in 1838. And it is very apropos for what is happening in America today. We need to go to break, Ben Martin. And before we do that, though, I want to just acknowledge another one of my great partners, and that is Castlegate Knife and Tool. They are a family-owned business. They are located right in Sedalia, Colorado. They have a wide array of knives, whether or not you're a collector, military personnel, if you're a sportsman, something for the kitchen, a wedding gift. Castlegate Knife and Tool has a wide selection, a wide array of products there. I would recommend that you maybe this weekend check it out. They're open 7 days a week. For more information, go to castlegate.com. That's castlegate.com. This is Kim Munson. I have Ben Martin on the line. We'll be back with additional thoughts on some of these speeches from a young Abraham Lincoln. Stay tuned.
Predovich & Company understands that the COVID-19 Wuhan virus disruption has individuals and businesses scratching their heads with a variety of bookkeeping, tax planning, and accounting questions. Predovich & Company knows that you need trusted professionals to help you navigate these choppy waters. Kim Munson highly recommends Predovich & Company. Because of their advanced technological capabilities, Predovich & Company can help clients anywhere in the United States. Call Predovich & Company at 303-791-3000 to organize your personal and business finances. Call 303-791-3000 today.
All of Kim's sponsors are an inclusive partnership with Kim and are not affiliated with or in partnership with KLZ or Crawford Broadcasting. If you would like to support the work of the Kim Munson Show and grow your business, contact Kim at her website, kimmunson.com. That's Kim Munson, M-O-N-S-O-N.com.
And welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Be sure and check out our website. That is Kim Munson, M-O-N-S-O-N.com. Sign up for our weekly newsletter where you will get first look at all of our upcoming guests, as well as our most recent Sounding Off with Kim Munson podcast and our most recent op-eds. On the website right now, Kim Munson, M-O-N-S-O-N.com, is our voter's guide. Rick Turnquest and I spent an enormous amount of time to do a very thorough analysis of each of the 11 ballot questions on the Colorado ballot this year. This is a great tool for you as you are completing your ballot. And then Jason McBride with Presidential Wealth Management. Go to airpresidential.com. That's airpresidential.com. He's done an analysis of what the Trump tax cuts have done for everyday hardworking people. On the line with me is Ben Martin. He is a patriotic historian, graduated from West Point, a former Army Ranger, a lover of the American idea. We're talking about Lincoln, a young Lincoln, this young men's speech, or the speech to the Young Men's Lyceum is an important speech. It was given in 1838. Let's jump over to the Peoria Address. Ben, I read both of these speeches, and the Peoria Address is a long speech. And I think people need to be very careful about just pulling things out as one quote from these speeches. You need to read these speeches in the entirety. It's kind of like the Bible. You need to read the Bible in its entirety so that you understand the big picture. But let's talk about the Peoria Address in 1854, Ben Martin.
Okay, so we talk about Lincoln after he wins and finishes his fourth term as a legislator in Illinois. He decides to retire from politics and go into his lucrative and comfortable life he really enjoys as an attorney. And so he works there for about four years, and then all these things start happening, these compromises that we talked about last time, the compromise of the Mexican War, the annexation of Texas, the California petition to enter the Union, the compromise of 1850, which we talked about, and then comes in 1854 the Kansas-Nebraska Act, which undoes the compromise of 1850 and causes Lincoln to reenter politics to stop the extension of slavery into the territories, which will eventually become states. So Lincoln looks at this and he reenters politics, and he takes his target politician that he's going to aim at is this guy called Stephen Douglas, who is a senator from Illinois, and at that time he's the most prominent politician and the most powerful politician in America, and he is the sponsor, he is the driving force behind this Kansas-Nebraska Act, which will allow Kansas and Nebraska to exercise their sovereignty to decide whether they will become slave states or free states. And Lincoln just can't stand that. And so he targets the most powerful politician in all of America at the time, which is Stephen Douglas. And he tries to engage Stephen Douglas in debate, but Stephen Douglas won't engage in debate because all it would do, he thinks, would just diminish himself in the high stature that he has right now, the high stature that he has. So he won't debate him. So what Lincoln says is, well, I know what I'm going to do. I'm going to follow him around. And every place he speaks, as soon as he's finished, even though he won't debate me, I'm going to stand up and ask the audience to stay so that I can answer those questions and address what Stephen Douglas has just, Senator Douglas, he called him Judge Douglas a lot. He said, which Judge Douglas has just talked to you about. And that started working, and it started working in big towns, the state capital, like Springfield. He did a couple of speeches there. And in Bloomington, which is another big place, and then Peoria, which at the time was the second largest city in the state of Illinois. And this speech that we talk about in Peoria is the most significant of all of those many speeches they do in 1854, these debates that they have. And Peoria is about 16 miles north of Springfield, and Douglas was scheduled to speak there in front of the courthouse, which was a Greek revival. It is only 8 years old, and it was on Adams Street. And the speaker's platform or podium was arranged underneath the portico of the Capitol. And the audience, which was estimated at that time to be 5,000, was to stand in the open square surrounding the courthouse. Douglas was to speak first and for as long as he desired. And then Lincoln was then to answer him for as long as he desired. Then Douglas would have another hour to reply to Lincoln. So Douglas begins his speech in the afternoon and speaks for 3 hours defending the Kansas-Nebraska Act, and after which Lincoln was called to speaker, he surveyed the crowd and correctly assessed that they were hungry and tired from standing. There were no seats. Remember, again, this is October in Illinois, mid-October. It's not necessarily a warm time of the year. So Lincoln then addresses the crowd to make a deal with them. He says, I know you are tired and hungry after listening to Senator Douglas speak for 3 hours plus. He said, I plan to answer him and will take as long to do that as he spoke to do so. And after I am finished, I have agreed to give Judge Douglas an hour to rebut my answers. I am sure you are wondering why I would give him such an able man as Douglas a great advantage over me, but it is because if you Democrats thought I would be the only one speaking, you may not come back to hear me, and I want you to hear my whole argument. I figure if you believe you will have the pleasure of watching Judge skin me after I speak, you will come back and listen to my argument. So what do you say to going back to your homes and eating your dinner, then returning here at 7 p.m.? And the audience answered with a cheer. Until wonderment, yes, go ahead.
Ben, we are just about out of time on this, and it is historic that Lincoln says to everyone to go home, and they come back, and they come back to hear this speech. I would recommend that people read this. There was no facilitator, moderator that was putting on the mute button, but we're out of time for today. We'll have to continue this conversation, Ben Martin. It goes by so quickly. Thank you so much.
It does. Oh, you're welcome. Thank you, Kim.
Okay, and our quote for today is from Abraham Lincoln. He says, "Sir, my concern is not whether God is on our side. My greatest concern is to be on God's side, for God is always right." Today, be grateful, read great books, think good thoughts, listen to beautiful music, communicate and listen well, live honestly and authentically, strive for high ideals, and like Superman, stand for truth, justice. And the American Way, this is Kim Munson signing off. God bless you, and God bless America.